The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. My name is Cathal Minogue and it's the opening weekend of the Premier League. It's back. On today's show, we're going to look ahead to this weekend's fixtures, including Manchester United versus Arsenal. We'll also chat about Jack Grealish's move from Man City to Everton. And speaking of Everton, I'm going to be chatting with an Irish toffee. This is The Kickoff. Let's get into it.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. My name is Cathal Minogue and sitting across from me is the one and only Colm Buhig from Off The Ball. Colm, how are you?
Hiya, Cathal. Are you well?
Now, Colm, we had originally planned that it was going to be me and you for the long road here on The Kickoff, okay? Mm-hmm. First day of the season, last weekend. No sign of you. Mm-hmm. Episode one, gone. Mm. I have you today. Might not have you next week. You might take some...
Oh, I'll be there next week.
Okay.
I was rested the first day of the season, which is interesting. Summer signing.
Yeah.
Decided not to play me. That's fine. So I went off to London. There was reports about that. I don't know how the media found out about that. So I spotted there, a few pictures taken. And look, it was touch and go for a while, Cathal, and I didn't know what was going to happen. But thankfully I had my own crew around me, you know, my clique.
You're protected?
Yeah, and that's what you need at these times. Like, so it's tough, look, because I was very excited. I brandished the jersey as well for Today FM.
Yeah.
So I thought it was great signing. And
I stood behind you, hand on shoulder, as you were signing the papers.
And then I saw the starting team for the first week. I was out.
I couldn't believe it.
I don't know what happened in training. But here I am, I'm back now. And look, the party line is that I was rested. And I suppose, look, I wasn't totally match fit either.
No.
But, you know, my argument would be you spent all this money on me. And I need to play my way into the team. So I think it's wise that we use me this week. Look, the money was paid and now it's time to get your investment.
Impressive top line answers from you there, by the way, as well. Yeah, we did have Will O'Callaghan on last week.
Solid player.
Solid player.
Good player, you know.
You know, and in the papers, he got an 8 out of 10.
Did he? Yeah, but doesn't give the ball away, Will.
No,
he's
no.
One touch pass.
No, actually, sometimes he struggles to pass the ball back, is what I would say about Will.
Oh, really? Yeah. Was he dispossessed? He was.
Oh, you know, no.
Well, you were calling for a ball in the corner because you were like, you want to score the goals. That's what you're there for.
You wind Will up and you let him off, okay? A couple of things before we do kick off. We have an email address.
Yes.
It's kickoff@todayfm.com. That's the place to get in touch. Maybe you have a suggestion for the show. Maybe you are a fan heading off to a match one of the weekends and you just want to give yourself a shout out or maybe someone else a shout out. That's what Adrian did.
Hi, Carl. Adrian in Leash here, season ticket holder with Spurs, heading over for the first game of the season versus Burnley. Hoping for a win, new manager, a couple of new players, and going to predict the 3-1 win. Best of luck with the new show and up the Spurs.
Up the Spurs. Thank you very much, Adrian. Yeah, heading off. Very exciting heading off. First weekend.
Did you ever go to that stadium? The new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium?
No.
It's unbelievable. It's there a couple of years ago, right? And you go in and there's the beers of the world on one side of the stadium, like all the way down. There's live music. The food is sensational. The football cattle is nearly inside. It's
okay.
A day out. Like it's like a festival. And then you go out into the up the stairs and you see the pitch. And it's somehow both vast and compact. Incredible atmosphere there. It's
really?
Honestly, it's like probably pound for pound the most impressive stadium I've seen.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's sensational. All they need now is a bit of trophy after the Europa League and a bit of league title chase and that club is ready to go.
Yeah. Well, actually, speaking of stadiums, later on in the show today, I'm going to be chatting with Lee Riley, who's an Everton fan. Wait until you hear him talk about Goodison and the last day that he was there. It would bring a tear to even a Liverpool fan's eye.
Would it? Really?
Oh,
do you think
it's so? Emotional. He's emotional. Well, maybe not a Liverpool fan, but he is emotional. Also, just want to mention, if you play fantasy football, we have a fantasy league. It's called the Kickoff, the Today FM's Kickoff Fantasy League or something like that. Anyway, the code, if you want to write this down, because people were asking for it, VQ4ZIP. Okay, did you get that? Yeah. it's up on my Twitter as well, or up on X.
It's like a British registration plate in a car.
I know. VQ4ZIP. That's what I would say. I'll stick it up on socials as well, but join. I'm going to see, can I get an old prize for the winner on that? Some very good names so far have joined the league. Okay, mm-hmm. I'll give you my top three. Barry Milan, his team's name, AC Milan. Very good.
Spelt?
M-U-L-L-A-N-E.
Perfect.
Milan, like John Milan. Sean Brady's Victoria's Secret. Victoria's Secret. And my favourite, Pamela Joyce, who was a former Today FM. Yeah. Very good friend of mine. Brentford Rejects.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
Come on.
Iconic show on Nickelodeon. You know this? Brentford Rejects.
Top notch. I think you can actually watch some of that on YouTube, you know.
What? This Brentford
Rejects.
Do you know that?
No one would watch this.
Do you know? I don't say that about this. After all the money you paid for me. Martin Keown, the iconic Arsenal defender, was in that show, Brentford Rejects, as was Gianfranco Zola. This is mad, right? This is like a retrospective algorithm listening. Is that clip popped up in my feed the other day. Brentford Rejects is an iconic show. Had an unbelievable theme song by the Manic Street Preachers. People will know it's Australia is the tune, right? And then there was a character in it that you never saw that person's face.
Yes.
You always hear them. They wore purple. They're a bit of a rabble. But then one day in the episode, Keown and Zola showed up and they played opposite. So Zola was the hard man and Keown was all tricks.
Really?
Yeah, it was a crazy world. No wonder Pamela Joyce is a fan of that.
Yeah.
And I was a fan of Brentford Rejects, which, Cahill, I think we agree on, is going to be basically the official / unofficial team for the season, for the show.
That's what we were saying last week, and hopefully this weekend is a good weekend. Obviously, Keith Andrews at the helm there. So yeah, we're going to be watching with interest. There's lots of football to talk about. Obviously, it's the opening weekend of the Premier League. We will do that later on in the show. First of all, I wanted to talk about the world of football, which you call them, because there's a couple of things happening in the world of football. One of the things I did not expect to happen is Wayne Rooney having a bit of a Barney with Tom Brady. Have you been watching Tom Brady's Prime Video? Amazon Prime, this is on. It's documenting his takeover of Birmingham City.
When I was in London, I was in a house and this is being played in the background. I've seen the clip. Now, you've been watching this, right? You've been watching the show. I saw the clip of Tom Brady questioning the work ethic of the new manager at the time, Wayne Rooney. And I've since heard Rooney's retort.
Yes. Well, this is Tom Brady, right? So it's basically... It's Tom Brady and some other guy that I don't know, but it's more so about Tom Brady. Yeah. They've taken over Birmingham City. It's very much like the style of Wrexham, whatever that show is, the documentary about Wrexham. It's kind of like Sunderland Till I Die. It's all the very same as all of those ones. But Tom Brady goes to visit Wayne at the training camp, and this is him. This is Tom Brady in the car on the way home. This is Brady and the Blues on Amazon Prime. Have a listen.
I'm a little worried about our head coach's work ethic.
A little too lackadaisical.
I mean, I don't know. They don't have great instincts on that.
Now, the edit on the actual episode is really bad on Wayne.
Yeah.
He's very chilled out in it. He's kind of distracted in it and things like that. But it's the day before a match, so I think things are kind of chilled out anyway, you know? Now, Wayne has his own podcast called The Wayne Rooney Show, original, and he was asked about it.
I think it was a very unfair comment. I mean, when I went into Birmingham, he was in a mess, really. Hence the fact that I went in, the players weren't really the players who could take the club forward. And we knew that. And I think Tom come in once, which was the day before a game where the day is a little bit lighter anyway. And I don't think he really understood football that well at the time. Maybe he does now. Which
I don't think he does.
No, but what he does understand is you know, he's a hard worker. We know that. But so that's why I'm really disappointed with the comment.
Now, him to say that Birmingham were in a mess when he joined, they were sixth and in the playoff positions.
Yeah.
They went down.
I think he was talking about like that the players at Birmingham weren't fit for purpose about what they wanted to achieve and didn't align with Rooney himself and his ambitions. It's remarkable how many jobs he's had in football, actually, since he retired from playing. Like, he's managed Plymouth as well, subsequently. And it just hasn't worked out for him. Because when he was at Derby, there was kind of a lot to admire about his management style, but they were restricted in what they could do, which I think suited him. But then he went to this club who had huge ambitions under this owner, who's like, in the grand scheme of things, like Wayne Rooney is one of the most elite sports people in history. Not necessarily about like his conditioning and how he looked after himself, but what he achieved and his natural ability. One of the few people overall in sport history that is more accomplished than Wayne Rooney in probably every regard is Tom Brady.
Yeah.
So I'd say that there was a natural ego clash straight away. It's funny because when I saw that clip of Tom Brady, I thought he was being sarcastic.
Right. You know,
that's the interpretation I got. But it's like you say, like you were talking about the edit on Rooney doesn't look great. Mine was even more out of context because I saw Brady talking about it in the car. He's in the passenger seat, isn't he?
Yeah.
And then they show a clip of Rooney talking to him, and he, like you say, he's chilled out looking. And because he laughed afterwards, I thought he was like basically saying the opposite, that Rooney's really hard working. But obviously he meant it, and certainly that's the way Wayne Rooney took it. So he's taken an exception to it. But like you say, you know, Rooney said it was a mess when he took over. They were sixth, they're in the playoffs. So it's all about self-preservation. The guy still wants to be a manager. Of course he's going to say that. Yeah. In the meantime, the BBC are looking after him. He has his own show. He's going to be a regular on that. Maybe he'll be a bit like Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville, particularly, who did manage, in that he'll get cosy and comfy with the media world and we might not see him in management again. But it's remarkable for a fella so young that he's had the number of jobs that he's had already, presumably by reputation. But there is an obsession that he has with football. He knows what he's talking about. Fascinating that that's the vibe that Tom Brady got from that one day looking at him.
Yeah. Tom Brady seems to be in the way a lot so far from right. the episodes I've watched. It's a very different culture. The American, he's, you know, because he gives that American jock vibe.
Yeah.
He's in the hallway, you know, before games and stuff and during training, he's trying to talk to the players and all. But just even phrases like, go out there and kick their ass. It's just these lads are like, what is he talking about? Do you know? Even though it's Tom Brady. Yeah. Well, speaking of Wayne Rooney, obviously in transfer news, we did have the confirmation that Jack Grealish has signed for Everton from Man City. Mm-hmm. He's there for on loan for the year.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about that, more so, we obviously can't wait to see him this weekend, see how this works out. Yeah. But he did talk about getting the number 18 jersey, right? I want to talk about jerseys in a second. Mm-hmm. He was being interviewed as he was being signed, as he was being unveiled, and he had a chat about getting the number 18 jersey. Have a listen to this.
It was the other day, actually. I went for some Sunday dinner, and he was there, and I mentioned, you know, that the move could be happening, and, you know, he only spoke good words about this club, as you can imagine. And then, yeah, he mentioned something about the number 18, and believe it or not, I actually already had that in my mind anyway, and I said that to him at the time. Gascoigne's worn it, and... obviously, Wayne Rooney has as well, so my two favourite ever English players.
They're an interesting trio. Jack Grealish, Wayne Rooney and Paul Gascoigne. They all kind of have similarities.
They do.
Don't they?
Well, they enjoy themselves, Cahill, in varying degrees and levels, but they're a lover of life, and it reflects the way that they play ball at their best, currently and formerly. Well, Gazzel, Everton never saw the best of Gazzy. He was a bit past it. Obviously, Rooney, we've never seen the likes of him when he came to Everton. Mm. What kind of Jack Grealish are we going to get? I don't know. He wasn't really relevant for the last 12 months, yet we still talk about him.
Yeah.
So that number 18 shirt becoming iconic. And what about jerseys?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because I have heard that on Off the Ball, you have ranked the top 20 home jerseys in your preference, basically. There's no other scientific metric to this at all.
It's all up here, Cahill. Do you know what I mean?
Give me your top three jerseys, home jerseys, Premier League.
My favourite for this year.
Favourite, yeah.
Number three, Fulham. Beautiful, right? White, Adidas, black trimmed. The beauty of it, two prominent colours, white and black. A bit like Sligo.
Okay, wow. I know this is very visual, but I mean, that just describes it as best. I mean, it's just so vivid in the eye now.
Do you want number two?
I do. Is it Newcastle?
No, it's a good point, though, because it's a very different use of black and white. Didn't work out for them. Crystal Palace, number two. Sensation. Now, Cahill, I wouldn't be a fan of a Palace jersey, generally speaking, right? So it's blue and red. Mm. Don't like that clash. What they've done this year, crucially, they have a bit of a white trim to separate the blue and red, and it is nothing short of gorgeous. If a Crystal Palace jersey walked by me in the street, Cahill, I turn around.
Has it ever walked past you in the street?
I hope it does this year, and I hope it does for you too.
And you'll tell.
Because you would love it, right?
Yeah. So it'll be like that meme where the guy is looking back.
It's literally what I was thinking. When I said it, that's what I was thinking of, right? Yeah. So people have seen this already in the Community Shield last weekend when Crystal Palace beat Liverpool and won it. So there's the traditional Palace colours, but the white trim, oh, it's so beautiful. It's actually like a jersey from the continent.
Yeah, it's almost like a throwback as well.
I've seen it, yeah.
It's nice, yeah.
So gorgeous.
What's your favourite?
Nottingham Forest. Simple again, right? So two-tone colours, prominently red. Beautiful Adidas, white trim, Adidas again, white lines going down, very narrow lines, so simple, so beautiful. Why is that number one? Timeless. They will never age. You could wear that in 5 or 6 years' time, Cahill, and you wouldn't bat an eyelid. Whereas most jerseys age, I would say. You wear a jersey from 2 or 3 years ago, Manchester United, what are you doing with that? What happened to you? Wear this Forest jersey. It could be from the 1970s when Forest are winning back-to-back European Cups under Brian Clough, or it could be from 2025, and thankfully it is the latter.
Well, you're on the wrong podcast. You're working for, I don't know, Vogue or something like that.
Oh, thank God you said it, buddy.
Okay, finally, wrap things up. Give me the worst three.
That's what people want, isn't it? That's what people are here for.
Come on, annoy people.
Third worst, Everton.
Wow, okay.
Joy, manufacturer. Don't like what they have. Don't like the shade of the blue.
Oh yeah.
And the colour's not great either. So, but you never know. Like Jack Grealish might add a bit of Hollywood to it. So that's my third worst. Second worst, Chelsea. My note is put a bit of effort in, lads. Okay. All it is the Chelsea crest, the Nike tick, and that's it. The rest of it's just blue. It's like a training ground jersey. It's like if you and I started a Sunday League team and you went to buy jerseys online, that's what they'd send you.
And you'd no
it's
sponsor.
It's like, just design it yourself, lads. So no effort put in.
Have they no sponsor?
They have no sponsor. No sponsor last year either.
That's weird looking, isn't it?
Yeah, it was actually worse last year.
Like Limerick Hurlers.
Last year would have been but I don't know who their JP is. Well, Todd Bowley, yeah. So, like last year was worse, so it would have actually been the number one. But number one for me this year,
right?
2025-26, worst jersey in my opinion, home. Wolverhampton Wanderers, Wolves, right?
Ooh.
Again, manufacturer, I'm not mad about it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm on about the Nike Adidas equivalent. It just does nothing for me. What would I wear that with? If I'm on a night out, what would I wear that with?
That's something you'd wear on a stag when you have to wear terrible jerseys, to be fair.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, sorry, Wolves fans.
There are many teams in between, but they would be the top three and the worst three for me.
So did you have Everton there in your bottom three?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Lee Riley won't be fond of that. Lee Riley is a man who wears an Everton jersey many a day. He is part of the Irish Toffees, the biggest Everton supporters group in this country. He is on the way. Colm, you'll be back because we actually have to look ahead to this weekend's football, yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay, good man. You're listening to The Kickoff with myself, Cathal Minogue, and Colm Buhig. Lee Riley, Everton fan? He's on the way.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue.
Now it is time to talk to another fan. This time we're heading to Everton. Lee Riley from the Irish Toffees is on the line. How are you, Lee?
How's it going, Cathal? How are you?
Good, good, good. So you're a member of the Irish Toffees, the Everton supporters club here in Ireland. How long have you been an Irish Toffee?
I've been an Irish Toffee, I'd say roughly now about 7 years. 7 years I've been in with the Irish Toffees, but they've been going on since, I could say, the early 2000s, probably even before that, and around the 90s, the late 90s. They're a big club, a big supporters club here in Ireland. We branch off on different supporters clubs around Ireland. So like we have also the Limerick Evertonians that are involved with us. We have some from Cork as well, Mullingar, Derry, the list goes on.
Right, so it's not just Dublin or something that you're all based from.
No. So what it is, the Irish Toffees is it's basically everywhere around Ireland. So what we try to do is we set up here. The Irish Toffees actually set up in Selbridge and then moved into Dublin because there was more supporters in and around Dublin. So we started watching games in and around Dublin, and then what we did.
What do you mean? Like you'd meet up in pubs and all? Is it?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Sure,
okay.
our main spot is the Woolshed in town.
I know it, yeah.
We sit in there, we watch the games live. Also, other supporters groups do be in there as well. So you get a bit of banter sometimes, and there's a Premier League team on the other side and the opposition side.
Yeah.
Bit of a laugh. So it's well like that. And then we, like I said, we branched off. So we had supporters that want to get involved, but they were down the country. So like Limerick is another good one for instance, they have a supporters club that's kind of like another branch off the Irish Toffees, and they're down there watching their games. Sometimes they come up for the likes of our AGMs and meetings and stuff like that, or even a big Christmas events or stuff like that, you know.
So you'd meet up for Christmas, would you, and have actual meetups and parties? And also, did you say there you have AGMs? So it's ran as it's a proper club, like it's not just something where a crew head off to a match every so often.
Yeah, well, it is. It's a supporters club. So basically, we have a committee of people that work in volunteers. Like I myself, I'm a part of the committee. So we work after kind of like the social media. So there's some people looking after tickets, there's some people looking after events.
Oh, I'd say the tickets is probably the worst one. Is that the hardest one, I'd say, is it?
It is, yeah. So we have over 1,000 members, and you have more than 1,000 members coming in trying to get tickets off us, and you kind of have to leave it to the members, you know.
Have you been an Everton supporter all your life?
Well, funny enough, I was in a family that branched off, that were Manchester United, they were Liverpool, some of them were Chelsea, some of them were Arsenal, and what happened was I somehow became the black sheep of the family, and first ever game was Everton against Swansea.
Right. Random game.
Random game. And the worst part about it was I was in the away end.
So
I walked up with a lot of Swansea fans, and I felt like a child when I walked up the steps in the St. Goodison Park.
Yeah.
And me eyes lit up. It made me feel like a child again walking up the steps, and just the lights hit me in the face. And the next minute, there's a big park right in front of you where some of the players that you watch on telly, they're going to be out. And then I knew from then that I was going to be an Everton supporter. And it just kind of, every time I walk up the steps, the lights of the Gladys, the lights of the Bullens, anywhere that can get me ticket, walk up the steps and I can see, it just hits you. It's the feeling inside that it kind of gives you a lump in the throat anytime you're walking up the steps and
yeah.
seeing the right in front of you.
That's class. Well, Goodison Park obviously is an iconic stadium. It's no more now for the men's team. Did I read right that the women's football team are actually going to play there now? That's going to be their home ground. The new home ground for Everton now is the Hill Dickinson Stadium. Before we talk about the Hill Dickinson Stadium, which is quite the name, Lee. I don't know. You might be calling it something else, I'd imagine. Goodison, like as you're saying it there, it sounds like a special place. Obviously, it's historic. Teams never liked going there. Before I ask you what your best memory of Goodison is, was it always the same feeling every time you walked in? Like, how many games would you get over to in a season?
In a season? Well, last year I got to 5 games.
Okay. And would you have the same feeling as you're walking up the steps every single time? Would you, like, you know, the same buzz?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you'd have your own little traditions before you walk into the ground, and you still have that buzz when you're... Yeah, sitting with friends. Like, I have friends over in Liverpool now. Anytime I'm going over to the game, sometimes I even go by myself and I meet even friends that are not so part of the supporters club. I meet up with them, and it still feels like the same buzz. It's just, like I said, walking, even in the back of the concourse, you have fans chanting and lads singing, everything like that. And the atmosphere is just electric. So I get that buzz any time I walk through the gates. I got the buzz any time I walk through the gates of Goodison Park. The little small kind of concourse, but everybody was together. It's just unimaginable if you're a fan like that to walk into a stadium that's so old, so kind of like dilapidated. It wasn't upgraded in years, and you still said you still treated it like your home.
Yeah,
even though. You probably don't know the man to your left, the man to your right, but they could be our brothers at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the special thing about supporting a team, is that, as you said, you could go over on your own, and then all of a sudden the people that are beside you are your family, you know, in one sense. And, you know, when you're going over to on the plane, when you're heading over, so you'd fly into Liverpool from Dublin. I'm guessing that's the flight you'd take.
Yeah, well, that's another thing I could branch off about the Irish Toffees. So the Irish Toffees do boat trips as well.
Oh, right, okay.
So we can leave Dublin on a Friday morning, probably a Saturday morning, get the boat over to Holyhead, and then a bus from Holyhead up to Goodison Park and catch the 3 o'clock game. We've done that twice or three times last season, including the Junior Blues, which is a trip for kids. So, like...
Would you be wrecked?
You do be tired, but the reason about the years that they don't overnight stays. So we'd find our own accommodation in Liverpool, and we'd stay there, you know.
And you know, when you are flying, let's say you're taking the flight, would you find that if you are on the flight that it's the majority of fans going over are Liverpool fans?
Not necessarily. You get a few every now and again, but you wouldn't really see the thing is they'd probably play away that weekend.
Okay, that would make sense. Yeah,
They could be down in London. Playing the likes of Chelsea, Aston Villa, Spurs, or they could be in Birmingham playing Aston Villa, but they wouldn't be in Liverpool when we're going to a home game. Same vice versa, a Liverpool fan probably wouldn't see an Everton fan if they were flying over.
That makes sense. And so I'm guessing you're sad to see Goodison go then, are you?
Absolutely devastated. I was at the final game against Southampton. I was at the final two games this season, but I was at the final game against Southampton, and I can just remember while I walked up them steps, getting the lump in my throat, walking back down them steps with tears in my eyes.
Really?
It got to me, yeah. It did get to me.
And what it just means that much to you, that ground?
That ground means as much to me as Anton, realistically. First ground I ever visited, first game I ever went to in the Premier League. An emotional hold on myself, if I say that right.
Yeah, yeah, okay, wow. You must have a favourite moment. I'm sure you have lots of favourite moments from Goodison, but is there one that stands out? Is there one iconic one that you'd say, yeah, that was a special day?
Yeah, like you said, I have moments and memories to last a lifetime. Especially over the last few years, you know, that Goodison Park was gone. But my favourite memory was a little over a year ago, a bit more over a year ago. I was at the second last derby at Goodison Park, 2-0, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin raised at the back post to head the ball in and make it 2-0.
And by McNeil, up gets Calvert-Lewin! Everton's number 9, Gladys Street!
Well, this old ground shaking. What a header! I said in the first half, head it down!
So you're one of the 1,000 Toffees screaming your head off there as that goal goes in, Lee.
Oh, stop. I lost it in that moment. If somebody that knew me all their life turned around to see me on that day, they would have said, that wasn't you. They probably even used the word demonic, because I was going crazy. And where I was in the stadium was in the Bullens. So where that was, so I'd say there was about 2 or 3 rows to the left of me. And there's all the Liverpool fans.
Oh, right, okay.
Oh, there was big fanta, everything flying. And before the game was over, the away end was empty.
Really? Yeah? They'd cleared out?
Yeah.
You must have loved to see that.
Oh, it was unbelievable. It was probably one of the best 2 nights of my life, because the next day I went into, on that day, was the darts with one of my mates. The darts was on over the Liverpool.
Oh, so was it?
That's
some 48 hours you had.
Oh, stuff. And even at the darts, we were sitting at the darts, and as an Everton fan, you should find it hard to celebrate. I was even at the darts and I says, the match was yesterday, it was 2-0, I still think Liverpool are going to come back.
You couldn't believe it. It was that hard to believe.
Yeah. First derby. That was my first ever derby, and the first one as a win. I don't think I'll go to any more. I'll keep it like that.
That was the second last derby in Goodison, so was it? Because it was the season before last.
Yeah, season before last. The last one was 2-2.
And what are those derbies like?
The city. The city is madness.
Really?
Madness. Oh, madness. The night, like I said, the night after I went out to the darts, people were still chanting, you lost the league at Goodison Park at the darts. And there was a completely different sport going on. walking into one of the nightclubs, then after the darts, there was people walking around with signs trying to find Liverpool fans. Lost the league at Goodison Park, 2-0, up the Toffees, everything. It was... The band had the buzz. It was brilliant.
It sounds good. It does sound good. And come here. So you're going to get over to the Hill Dickinson Stadium. Are you going to call it that, or will it be just called Bramley Moor, or what do you think?
I don't. I personally don't think fans are going to call it the Hill Dickinson Stadium.
It just doesn't roll off the tongue, no, really, does it?
No. Like I see the fans more kind of saying the Bramley Moor Dock.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's where it's based, in around the dock there, yeah.
Exactly. It's just kind of like Goodison Park. Fans like myself and fans over in England as well that support our teams, they'll find it hard to call a stadium after a sponsor. It's just the way it is. There's a few clubs there, but like St. James's Park had it before, and that was Newcastle. So I'd say fans will find it hard to call it the Hill Dickinson. Be more likely call it Bramley Moor.
Bramley Moor sounds, it sounds like it's been forever. It's been called the Bramley Moor. You know what I mean? It doesn't sound too strange. Here, closer to home, we had that drama last year down in Cork with Parky Queeve. Are you going to get over? Have you got tickets for any of the games yet, or what's the plan?
I haven't actually booked anything in yet. Now I'm planning to go to 1 or 2 away games this season.
So like away games, right?
Yeah, one of them would be Sunderland. So I'm going to try to get the Sunderland away, and then I'll probably go to 1 or 2 games at home. I'm trying to cap it now at 3 a season. Try keep it down now, because I've done it 5 times last year, and
it's not cheap.
Yeah, no, it's not cheap, exactly.
How are you feeling ahead of the season?
Look, I had, over the last 3 years, being with Everton, I've watched relegation battles against Crystal Palace. So I've been to the Bournemouth game, last game of the season with the Corey scored. I've been to the last game at Goodison Park. What I hope to see is a stressful free season this season.
I don't think you're going to get that. I don't think any fan that's listening, whoever they support, will have a stressful free season, no matter who you support.
No, that's true. But at least something in the top 10, even the top 10, top half of the table, mid table, it'll do me. It's kind of like a reset, we'd say, with the new stadium. But
yeah,
that's what I hope for.
Yeah, well, you play Leeds on Monday night, live on Sky Sports. Monday Night Football is back, just like that, Lee, just like that. But look, thanks for talking to me. Enjoy the year. Send my regards to the rest of the Irish Toffees. Hopefully it's a stressful free season for you. I doubt it, but I hope it's a good season for you. And thanks a million for talking to me. And sure, we might talk later on in the year as well, depending on how Everton are going.
Ah, yeah, absolutely. Sure, look, I'm always free for a call, so don't be afraid.
Cheers. Enjoy the season, Lee.
Well, thanks very much, Cotterland. Up the Toffees.
Up the Toffees. Good luck.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Welcome back to The Kickoff with myself, Cathal Minogue, and Colm Boohig is back in the hot seat. Off the balls, Colm Boohig, of course. Colm, it is the opening weekend. We should talk about football, the football that is happening this weekend. It's very exciting. This is when every fan, their hopes are at their highest. And then it eventually might diminish, or it might even get even bigger. Some of the games we're going to focus on this weekend, I think we'll look ahead to Super Sunday, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because on Sunday, we have live on Sky Sports at 2 p.m. We have Chelsea versus Crystal Palace at Stamford Bridge. Interesting tie because both have recently won silverware, the Club World Cup for Chelsea. Crystal Palace won the Community Shield. What are you thinking? Are we going to find out if the Club World Cup is a good thing to win this weekend?
Yeah, it's the best question going, right? Because it's unprecedented. We've never seen the likes of it. We've never seen the likes of it, right? This Club World Cup, everyone thought it was going to be a disaster and as something sort of a show that I can't say on radio. And then okay. It happened, right?
Right.
And no one was looking at Chelsea. Everyone was looking away. So Manchester City lose in the last 16 and then Chelsea go on to beat Paris Saint-Germain in the final. And their goalkeeper, Gianluigi Donnarumma, presumably played so badly that Luis Enrique has since said, "I don't want you at the club," and he's gone. So Chelsea, on their day, are actually lethal. So technically, Cathal, you and me are sitting here talking about Chelsea as the best team in the world. That's what FIFA wants you to believe, right?
Yeah, they do.
Now,
yeah.
I'm not sure that's going to actually transition into the day-to-day or week-to-week of the Premier League. They signed pretty well in the summer. So Liam Delap from Ipswich, they got João Pedro from Brighton and Jamie Gittins from Borussia Dortmund, who's highly rated. They spent nearly 50 million on him, plus Jarrell Hato from Ajax. So it's a tidy enough looking side.
Well, could you name their starting 11,
that's
though?
That's the thing, you see.
The amount of players that they have.
Again, like, that's another like really good summary of the situation when it comes to Chelsea, is that like you could argue about them that they have a great collection of players, but they're basically a trading company. They're like on Wall Street. They're like, whatever's going up and down, we'll use, we'll buy and we'll sell. Just for the sheer thrill of transfers. But whatever about the team itself.
It does seem like that.
It's kind of dull when the transfer window closes because they have to play some ball. That's why they put no effort into their jersey. It was like, let's leave it off. We just like signing players. We're addicted to that.
That's the bit they like. Yeah,
So that's on one hand, but they're at home at Stamford Bridge against Crystal Palace. Like you said, they won the Community Shield. Mm. And why did they win that? Because they won the FA Cup, which is the first trophy in their history. Like, it's an amazing achievement. But then they got demoted from the Europa League to the Conference League because of their ownership issue. So it's been a very mixed bag for them over the summer. At the moment, at the time of speaking, they still have Mark Gahey, who's heavily linked with Liverpool, their captain and centre-back. And Eberechi Eze is also linked with both Arsenal and Spurs, but they still have them. I hope they hold on to them. I really like Palace, not just because they're my second favourite jersey this season, but I like Oliver Glasner. I love what he's doing. And I love the way they play football. They finished mid-table last season and they're better than that. They really are better than that.
Yeah, finished 12th.
Yeah. Now, they haven't done an awful lot of business is the only thing. Like, they got Walter Benitez on a free from PSV Eindhoven and Borna Sosa from Ajax, where they paid all money there, like £2 million is absolutely nothing in this day and age.
They need to hold on to who
they
have,
though. So if they get rid, or if they lose, I should say, Gahey and Eze, I'd say they're in trouble. They have another fellow as well in midfield, Adam Wharton. What a player. What a player. Like, his assist in the Community Shield against Liverpool too for that goal, the decisive goal. he's magical and he's proven it over the course of the last season. So their core is so strong, which is actually what I wouldn't say about Chelsea, is that their core isn't that strong, but they have a sprinkle of quality. So like, they've added the players that I mentioned there. Obviously Cole Palmer, is he going to be even more central this year? They've given him the number 10 jersey.
Yeah.
They've halved his jersey number. He's 20 last year. So on their day, like, Chelsea could beat anyone, as they've proven. They have a good manager in Enzo Maresca, who probably lacks a bit of charisma, but what he lacks in that, he makes up for in tactical awareness and astuteness. Like, he's a student of the game. He's a chess player, chess master.
Is he actually?
Yeah, and his strategy is, or his strategic input in Chelsea is really flexible. So if you look at last season, they were flying it until Christmas. And then Enzo Maresca went to the media and just talked themselves out of actually winning the thing. He says, no, like, we're not ready to win the Premier League. Cole Palmer replicated those comments, and then that's exactly what happened. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy, and they fell off completely. So they actually should have done better too. So I'd argue that they both actually underachieved a bit last season, Chelsea and Crystal Palace. This game will be mightily tight for that reason, like loads of games actually in this opening weekend. That's the beautiful thing about the opening weekend, right? Everyone's tanned, looking well, yeah, looking rested, everyone's enthusiastic, and that's just the fans.
You know, yeah, what I mean? Just like me and you.
That's that. We're looking unreal,
tanned and well rested.
Unbelievable.
Also on this weekend, on Sunday, is the big one. It's Manchester United versus Arsenal. It's on at 4:30, live on Sky Sports. Coverage starts at 4 p.m. So go on, what do you think?
I looked into this, right? I've done a bit of research for you on this one.
Right, good man, you did some work.
Finally,
you heard the expert.
I'm going on natural ability here for this morning. This is actually some work, Kyle, for once. United's record opening day of the season in the Premier League, right? So the first day of the season, they played 33. They've won 22. Wow. They have the best record in Premier League history from the first day of the season. They've only drawn 4 and they've lost 7. Now, the last 2 of the last 5 first day of the season they've lost. They won last year at home to Fulham. Arsenal themselves also played 33 because, of course, they're ever present in the Premier League since 1992, along with United. Arsenal have won 19 of their 33 opening games, lost 8. So they're both very strong opening day of the season. The last time they played each other in the opening day of the season, I believe, open to correction here in retrospect, I think it was 1989, so the early days of Alex Ferguson. United won 4-1 and they ended up finishing 13th.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's going to be a precursor. If that happens this weekend, where United will finish. I think the general feeling about United this season, Cahill, is that they'll be better than last season. Saying an awful lot.
Yeah, can't be hard.
They finished 15th, and 15th was very flattering to them because the last day of the season they beat Aston Villa, which for some reason propelled them up the league, but they were basically about 16th or 17th for the last few weeks of the season. For Arsenal, they finished second 3 years on the bounce now, but their summer recruitment has been outstanding.
Yeah, but they've been second the last 3 years, but kind of stumbled to second place, I would say.
Yeah, kind of, but I think consistency is a very overlooked trait in football. And the problem with Arteta is that he's done so well with them from when he's taken over. He's been there a long time, Kyle. He's there 5.5 years now, right?
Okay.
But the last time they won a trophy, in fact, the only time they've won a trophy under Arteta is 5 years ago. 6 months into his tenure, they won the FA Cup in 2020 against Chelsea at Wembley when there was no fans because of COVID. So they've never really looked like winning a trophy. But why that happened was there was a few things. It was about the mentality that they were prematurely stressed last season. They were like pent up from match day one. They had a couple of players sent off, getting injured. Arteta was a bit ratty. And then when they seemed to drop their guard a bit, they improved. But whatever about the mentality, the one thing really labelled against them was they don't have a goal scorer. They have too much reliance on Bukayo Saka. And they've arguably fixed that now with the acquisition of Victor Gyökeres.
Yes.
So everyone was after him. And they got him, Arsenal.
64 million from Sporting.
Sporting Lisbon. Like, it wasn't, it was only a couple of years ago he was playing for Coventry City.
Yeah, but I was looking back at his.
Yeah, yeah. So we had Sean Maguire on the show, former current Cork City player, Irish international. Mm. And we asked him, who's the best player you played with? And he was like, there's this guy called Victor Gyökeres. Because that's how quickly his fame has increased. This was only a few years ago now on Off to a Breakfast. He was like, there's a guy called Gyökeres who I played with who was phenomenal.
Go away.
Yeah, and that's how quickly his fame has, obviously still people knew him at the time, but I'm talking about overall, like the casual football fan.
Yeah, yeah.
So they have him, and they got Zubimendi in midfield, who's an international tournament winner with Spain. And so they're strengthened there in that department big time. I'd say they've upgraded in their midfield depth, and they've got that centre forward that they so desperately need. They strengthened in centre half as well with Mascara. They got a good backup goalkeeper in Kepa. They're strong. I'd argue that there may be a player short on the left-hand side of their attack because Gabriel Martinelli's fallen off big time. If they get Eparece Eze, the Crystal Palace guy, they'd be phenomenal.
Serious
they'd
team.
Be like, they, you know, they'll threaten Liverpool. I in the dry run we did, I said Liverpool win the league. I haven't changed my mind, but I think they'll win the league by process of elimination, because I don't believe that Arsenal will do it under Arteta. I think they're so, so good, but their ceiling, they smash their heads off the ceiling just before they lift the trophy.
Yeah, okay. In my opinion. Good analogy.
And Man City, I don't know if they're that strong, or not as strong as they used to be. Kevin De Bruyne is gone. They don't have a core, I don't think. And Chelsea, like we say, I just don't believe they're going to do it. So by process of elimination, even though Liverpool have changed half their team, I still think that they're going to retain the league.
Okay, just on Manchester United.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah.
New players in. Is it Sesko or Sesko?
Sesko, I Sesko, believe. Benjamin
yeah.
Sesko.
Yeah. I was saying Sesko today, mm-hmm. and Manchester United fan Dave Moore. He was correcting me, saying, no, you have to say Sesko.
Sesko. And he's a man for pronunciations, isn't he?
He is, he yeah. And I was like, okay, give me a break on the pronunciations on this show. There's so many. You know, you're good. You are good. But even some of the commentators struggle with surnames. I mean, so give me a break. Yeah, you know,
please give me a break. Start a campaign. Give Cahill a break.
Do you think he'll start? You know what I couldn't believe? I was just reading about him. Yeah. He's 6'5".
Yeah, it's crazy.
He is a big man.
Yeah. It is mad. And like back in the day, if you're 6'5", that would be what the only thing that people would talk about when you were a centre forward. Like Jan Koller, for people to remember him, it was like, oh yeah, he's a giant. But with Sesko, there's more going on. Like, he's actually quite fast.
What height would a Niall Quinn been?
Good question. You put me on the spot there, but I'd say, I don't know, 6'5", 6'6", maybe.
Do you think he's going to start? Because we obviously haven't seen.
I don't know, like, possibly, because I don't know what's happened with Rasmus Højlund. Like, he's been linked away. I think as we talk this weekend, he's been linked to AC Milan.
It does feel like he's going to go on loan, does it? That's
possibly,
kind of vibe.
Yeah, like they could hold on to him and see what happens.
Niall Quinn, 6'4". There you go.
That's mad. So Sesko's taller. So they basically brand new front three. So they could play Brian Mbeumo, Matthias Cunha and Benjamin Sesko. But the issue that they might have in getting all their best players into the team is this stubbornness that manager Ruben Amorim has, that 3-4-3 system he plays. So he has his three centre-halves. And he says, "What well, they're not wing-backs, he plays wide players." So that would be, who are you talking there? Amad Diallo on one side and Patrick Dorgo on the other. But then you'd have, who would play in midfield alongside Bruno Fernandes? You need someone who's going to do all the work. Casemiro doesn't have the legs.
Mason Mount, where does he?
Mason Mount would be the Fernandes role, so you can't play him there. Or he'd certainly be of the attacking mindset. You could play him in a six, but that's not really natural for him. Amorim doesn't seem to fancy Manuel Ugarte or Kobbie Mainoo. So do you do a thing where you play, Casemiro and Ugarte or Mainoo, and have Fernandes ahead as a false nine, and then play two of the three between Cunha, Sesko and Mbeumo, possibly? So it's a weird thing with United. You're asking me about their signings. They've been good on paper. I'm not sure what the best looking United is. And the thing about there is that they're not going to be playing every 3 days because they have no European football. So there's going to be often times this season where United will have a week between games.
Mm.
So they actually can afford to pick a strongest 11. They can afford to have that in their mind. And I'm actually not sure what that is, because I could pick you 11 players that would play, and they might be the 11 best players of the club, but I'm not sure it's the best system, because Amorim's obsessed with 3-4-3.
Yeah,
I have a goalkeeper conundrum too. He seems to stay with Onana. I mentioned Donnarumma earlier. I think they should be going for Donnarumma. Apparently Man City want them. And Chelsea are linked to them. But I think they should upgrade the goalkeeper too.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. But do you think it won't be this weekend?
I don't think so. I think I'd almost go as far as to say United could be done. Because there's been no movement or noise at all about signing a midfielder, which I think they desperately need. Unless he has faith in Ugarte and Mainoo, but it doesn't even look like it from pre-season. For some reason, Kyle, the feeling is good at United, which makes no sense because they lost the Europa League final, one of the worst finals ever to Spurs. But it's because we haven't seen them. Out of sight.
Yeah.
Out of mind. But also, you feel good about someone. The absence makes the hair grow fonder. And Amorim's looking tanned and well and svelte. So people are conned into thinking, this actually could go really well for United.
Well, it can only get better. It literally can only get better.
I say so. Because it was so catastrophic last season. And they're kind of off-Broadway-ish because they're not playing European football. So we just won't see him as much.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Very quickly, give me your two predictions. Chelsea, Crystal Palace. Who are you going
2-2. Yeah.
United, Arsenal.
0-2 Arsenal will win.
Okay.
Yeah, 2-0 to Arsenal.
But there you go.
Yeah.
It is the opening weekend.
It is very, very exciting. Colm, you can tell by his voice how excited he is of the opening weekend and the hope and dreams that are in his voice as well. It's all kicking off on Friday. Liverpool face Bournemouth. That's the curtain raiser live on Sky Sports. On Saturday, live on Sky Sports, the game, Wolves versus Man City. That's 5:30 Saturday, so that'll be a nice one now to chill out for the evening. And then a super Sunday, as I said, Chelsea versus Crystal Palace, 2 p.m. United versus Arsenal, 4:30. And Monday night football, Leeds versus Everton. The Premier League is back. We are up and running. Thank you for listening to The Kickoff. Colm, I shall talk to you next week.
Have a good one.
My name is Colm Minogue. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the weekend. Good luck.
The Kickoff with Colm Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.